Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Let's get straight to the docket. First, Scott Peterson could actually get a new trial. Second, creepy medical technician schedules follow-up appointments with patients. Third, example of what is not justified self-defense. Fourth, a missing Montana woman has been located. Fifth, don't like your husband? That's right. Hire a 17-year-old to get rid of him. Six, new information on the George Floyd matter. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most unbiased, fact-driven, true crime channel on YouTube. First, if you haven't done so already, we'd ask that you hit that subscribe button, hit that like button, and don't forget to hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. Now, we have a busy docket today. Not as busy as yesterday, but we got some good stuff today for you. First, Scott Peterson could actually get a new trial. Now, as you may recall, Scott Peterson was convicted many years ago regarding the death of his wife and his unborn child. He was given the death penalty. And roughly about a month ago, the California Supreme Court vacated the death penalty sentence for Scott Peterson. Well, now, in continued post-conviction relief motions filed by Scott Peterson's attorneys, the California Supreme Court has said, you know what? There may be one issue here that has some merit. So we're going to order, the California Supreme Court has ordered the trial court to hold a hearing regarding some juror conduct on the case. This is the kind of thing that is going to make the prosecutor have a little bit of a pucker factor, all right? The same court that already threw out the death penalty conviction because the judge didn't allow qualified jurors to remain, the Supreme Court has now said, look into this juror misconduct, which may have resulted in an unfair trial. And if that hearing is held, the trial court will have to decide whether a new trial is warranted. And I assure you, if the trial court denies Scott Peterson a new trial, it will be appealed, and ultimately it may get to the California Supreme Court. Now, this court's already been found to have made error once. Do you think he wants to make it again? Do you think he wants to give Scott Peterson a new trial? We'll have to wait and see. The issue as it relates to this new hearing is to determine whether Peterson should be granted a new trial on the grounds that juror number 7 committed prejudicial misconduct by not disclosing her prior involvement with other legal proceedings, including, but not limited to, being a victim of a crime. So it is alleged in the petition, and the California Supreme Court agrees, that juror number 7 may have committed prejudicial misconduct by not disclosing her prior involvement with other legal proceedings, including but not limited to being a victim of a crime. Now, this juror was initially an alternate juror, but she was given a seat when another juror was discharged. She later wrote a book about her experience. According to Peterson's attorneys, they believe that juror number 7 worked just a little too hard to get on the jury. She reportedly claimed she was willing to serve despite her employer telling her she wouldn't be paid for her time as a result of her missing work. This is significant. As I said, originally, the California Supreme Court overturned Peterson's death sentence due to significant errors in jury selection. Here, it sounds like there may be a juror who literally wanted to get on the case, maybe for financial gain, maybe she had an agenda, but she didn't report that she had involvement with the legal system, including protection order cases that she was involved in. Of jury selection is called voir dire, and it means to speak the truth. And what that means is that jurors are supposed to speak the truth. And it's to find out at the end of the day, whether somebody can be a fair and impartial juror. And if you have a bias, a motive for conviction or an acquittal as it relates to the parties in this particular case, you're not giving the other side a fair shot. And if you have a juror who is biased and she took that bias and maybe tainted the other jurors, that will also be significant. The fact that the Supreme Court has already said there were just juror issues and now it's being remanded to develop a further record as it relates to juror issues makes me think Scott Peterson may actually have a shot at this. And the other reason is it's California. Everything drags on in California from what I can tell. Not licensed there, but it just seems like everything always drags on in California. Now you have to remember, was that there was no physical evidence relating to Scott Peterson actually being involved in the death of his wife and son. It was circumstantial. Now, don't get me wrong. There was some pretty strong circumstantial evidence, which would show some consciousness of guilt. Let's take a quick look at that. First, trained dogs picked up Lacey's scent at the Berkeley Marina, where Peterson claimed he went fishing when Lacey vanished. Obviously, her remains were found later, close to the same area. Peterson visited the crime scene repeatedly. The tarp that Peterson used on his fishing trip was covered in gasoline in his shed. Gasoline was known by several people to destroy DNA at that time. Perhaps it's just a coincidence. Another tarp was found buried in fertilizer, also known to destroy DNA. That was according to Dr. Henry Lee, who testified at Peterson's trial. Now, Peterson told detectives he stopped fishing because it began to rain, although there was no precipitation in the Berkeley Marina on the day in question, according to the harbor master. Peterson claimed Lacey was watching a cooking segment on television when he left their home on December 24th, but the show he referenced actually aired on December 23rd. Lacey wore a diamond necklace, sapphire ring, and band each and every time she left her home. On the day she disappeared, the jewelry was left in her bedroom. Now, after Lacey and Connor's remains were found, authorities caught Peterson close to the Mexico border with his hair and beard dyed blonde, an identification that didn't belong to him, several credit cards, clothes, knives, 4 cell phones, a rope, camping supplies, and roughly $15,000 in cash. Circumstantial evidence? Possibly. The jury believes so. Was it enough to convict? Well, it was several years ago, back in 2004. Would it be enough to do it again today? We'll have to wait and see if Scott Peterson gets a new trial. Next on the docket, a creepy medical technician schedules some follow-up appointments. That's right. A Missouri medical technician has been charged with sexual abuse and invasion of privacy after he allegedly set up a fake CT scan for a woman who'd had an x-ray earlier in the day. Ryan Williams, 39, we'll give him the presumption of innocence, was the x-ray technician who saw the victim when she reported to the Mercy Lincoln Hospital in Troy, Oklahoma, back on October 3rd of this year. That was done at her doctor's request. After the x-ray, the woman went home. At 7:30 p.m., prosecutors alleged that Williams called her and asked her to return to the hospital for another exam because they saw something and they wanted to check it out. Needless to say, the patient returned to the hospital roughly 30 minutes later, where Williams escorted her to the CT scan room and gave her a gown. He had her lay on the table and lifted her gown, touching her breast while placing stickers during the scan, according to investigators. After the exam, Williams showed her a scan and said the doctor was concerned she may have lymphoma. But 2 days later, when she contacted her doctor, she was told there was no such history of such a scan. She also learned Williams had accessed her medical records from the hospital system. Police investigators found out that Williams had been searching hospital records for non-elderly adult women who had potential health issues involving their private parts. Investigators are concerned that there may be actually more victims with similar acts as he was working at the hospital for some time. The hospital, of course, has launched an internal investigation, and Mr. Williams has some legal issues forthcoming. Just shows, ladies and gentlemen, there's always someone out there that you think is supposed to be doing good and is doing something weird and creepy. Next on the docket, let's give you a good example of what is not self-defense. Well, there is a case out of Detroit right now, and it happened on the east side of Detroit at a 76 or 76 gas station. And the police say that the clerk at the gas station saw Joshua Lewis. He was 30 years old and allegedly stealing from a coin change machine. The clerk did the obvious thing, right? Pick up the phone and call the police. Maybe just make sure the cameras are going so that you can see it all. No. This clerk picked up an AK-47, fired a single shot through the safety glass, and guess what? Mr. Lewis was killed by the round that pierced through the safety glass and obviously striking him. Needless to say, the police are treating this as a homicide, as well it should be. You do not get to justify using deadly force when someone is stealing quarters from a change machine. For you to use justified deadly force, you have to believe that you are in fear of death or serious bodily injury. And even then, it still has to be reasonable in your use of force. And I assure you, this situation is not a reasonable use of force. The clerk should be charged with murder. Before we go on, please, I have asked you, everyone needs to be able to do a criminal background search. We do it here almost on a daily basis where we have names that come up in cases. We need to find out information about them because everyone has a secret. And the question is who is going to be able to find it? And that secret can be very powerful. Now, when you go to crimetalksearch.com and sign up for a background subscription, you can then anonymously search as many individuals as you would like. And while you wait, you literally have a report generated as a result of a search of millions and millions of public records. You're going to get criminal background searches. You're going to get results regarding public records, marital records, bankruptcies, debts. Anything that somebody has that's a public record, it's going to be published. You're going to be able to find out if someone has phone numbers associated with them, email addresses, as well as social media. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up. You'll be glad you did. Next on the docket, an all too familiar story. A missing mom has been located, and in this case, it's a Montana mom who'd been missing since September, is found deceased in her car inside a storage container. Mother of four, Sally Jane Demarius Smith, who resides in Montana, was known for always being upbeat, whether she was leading a spin class or getting her colleagues in the early morning hours at the elementary school where she worked. The 52-year-old vanished on September 25th. Her husband, children, and many friends were obviously worried sick about her. On Sunday, her loved ones received the shocking news that she was found, and in fact, she was deceased. The body was found in a 2005 Toyota Corolla in a storage unit just outside of Great Falls. The autopsy was scheduled for Tuesday, and the results have not been issued to the public just yet. The police are investigating, and they have not said whether they believe Smith was a victim of foul play or whether this was in fact a case of suicide. Friends and family are indicating or implying through various Facebook posts that they believe that she was the victim of foul play. Smith's husband states that he had driven some 3,000 miles looking for her and in fact had even searched for her in an airplane. He states that the family is devastated and will see if there's a suspect or whether this was in fact foul play or something else. We'll keep you apprised of future developments. All right, ladies, you don't like your husband, your ex-husband? Get rid of him. That's right. And look for a 17-year-old to do it. You know they're going to be thorough about it, right? Yeah, not so much. Well, guess what? A woman in Washington State is being accused of offering a 17-year-old $13,000 to get rid of her ex-husband. Shireen Kelly allegedly got Joshua Good to attack her former spouse, and the teenager assassin, in turn, got another kid by the name of Quincy Mendez to act as a getaway driver. That's not even the most bizarre thing about this, is that the victim, Baron Lee, was shot 9 times and survived. Apparently, the victim fell to the ground and the suspect stood over him and continued to fire, according to the police reports. Now, Lee, the victim, states, "Of course I knew she was crazy. Did I know she was capable of doing something like this?" He says, "Of course, without a doubt." Now, Good shot Lee 9 times outside of his apartment, and miraculously, none of the rounds hit any organs or arteries. That left alive a witness victim with a lot to tell police. Lee reportedly told the cops that the only person he could think of behind this was his ex-wife, Kelly. They'd been apparently fighting for custody for 5 years over their 6-year-old son. Gee, do you think you may figure who's going to get custody at this point? The real target, according to Lee, was not him. He was the outlet. "I was in the way. The target's my son, and I'm glad he's going to be safe now," according to Lee. The child also apparently has a trust fund from his settlement after he sustained a brain injury as an infant. Lee alleges that his ex-wife was really only there to collect the money. Police also were able to link Kelly to the crime after finding a tracking device on the victim's car, using online records to connect that device to Miss Kelly. Now, Mr. Lee says he doesn't blame Good and Menendez because they're kids who did something really stupid, like shot him 9 times. Needless to say, now Kelly, Good, and Menendez face a case for attempted first-degree murder. Kids are being tried as an adult, and an arraignment is set for October 26th of this year. You just can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. Next on the docket, some new information that comes out regarding the George Floyd matter. In some recent filings made by the prosecution in this case, the prosecutors are alleging in their filing that during the first 5 minutes, Mr. Floyd was pinned and yelled, "I can't breathe," more than 20 times and called out for his deceased mother almost a dozen times. He told the officers almost 10 times that he feared he would die. He stated repeatedly, "Please, your knee in my neck," Floyd pleaded. "Tell my kids I love them." After 4 minutes, Floyd's cries became softer, and soon his screams turned into grunts and his grunts into mumbles. Floyd uttered his last words around 20 minutes, 23 seconds into the video. That's when he fell silent and lost consciousness, according to the prosecutor's filing. Over 4.5 minutes, Floyd was silent, according to the pleadings by the prosecutor. For at least 3 of those minutes, Floyd appeared to be not breathing. And for at least 2.5 minutes, the officers were unable to locate Floyd's pulse. Prosecutors further say in their filings that concerned bystanders frantically warned the cops 10 times that Floyd was no longer moving, warned them 9 times that Floyd was unresponsive, and pleaded with them nearly 30 times to check Mr. Floyd's pulse. Even as the bystanders pleaded with Officer Chauvin to remove his knee from Floyd's neck, Chauvin rolled his knee back and forth, pressing it into Floyd's neck and maintaining pressure on Floyd's breathing. That's what the prosecutors allege. Now, Chauvin is facing charges of second-degree murder, second-degree manslaughter, and third-degree murder, and he was actually released from custody last week on a $1 million bond. The other officers, Lane, Koenig, and Tao, are each charged with aiding and abetting murder and manslaughter. And once again, this was all over a counterfeit $20 bill. We certainly don't condone people passing fake $20 bills to anybody, but as we saw yesterday from the video that we put up about the officer who exercised great restraint when not shooting someone when actually they justifiably would have been justified. The Floyd case is a perfect example of officers going to the extreme and ignoring the circumstances around them. If there is a conviction in this case, it will be for their complete disregard of the medical situation that was taking place with Mr. Floyd. That is manslaughter at a minimum, possibly second-degree murder as well. But we'll see what a jury does in this particular case. The officers are ultimately going to argue that they were just following procedures and you can't blame us, we're just doing what we were told. And we'll see how that defense plays out when these trials come before the jury. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Police were called in the early hours last week after reports of gunshots were heard at an apartment complex, there were reports of a man dressed as a gorilla carrying a machete. He apparently was also threatening to blow up the building. Now, this was in Fargo, North Dakota. When the officers arrived, they saw a man dressed like a gorilla carrying a machete. They learned that the gunshots were, in fact, fireworks, but they also learned the suspect had threatened to go inside the building and blow it up. The gentleman in the gorilla suit was identified as Jordan Pickus, 26. He ultimately surrendered to the police. He was taken to the hospital for a mental health evaluation and was ultimately arrested and transferred to the jail for the charge of terrorizing. We certainly hope that Mr. Pickus gets any mental health treatment that he needs. But in this particular case, Mr. Pickus is our dumb criminal contestant of the day. If you're going to try and do something, you probably don't want to draw a whole lot of attention to yourself. But running around in a gorilla suit and a machete is going to draw attention. I don't care who is passing by, they're going to call the police. So Mr. Pickus, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Now, if Mr. Pickus is our dumb criminal contestant of the week, he's got some tough competition as always, he will be receiving a dumb criminal contestant winner mug. That's right, straight from Crime Talk. And as always, if you want a mug but don't want to be a contestant, go to the link below, click on the Teespring link, and get yourself a mug along with lots of other cool merchandise. I want to thank everyone for watching. Have a great day. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.